we've learned anything from these past couple of years, my fellow Americans, it's that personal medical freedom and liberty are in crisis. America Out Loud Pulse brings together the top experts in healthcare-related fields to keep you a beat ahead.
Welcome to America Out Loud Pulse. I'm your host, Nurse Jody O'Malley. You know, guys, being a whistleblower, oftentimes you feel very alone. When the PREP Act was initiated and the government declared COVID a national emergency, our ethical principles and oath to our patients became severely compromised. I often wondered, where are the nurses at? Why aren't more sounding the alarm? Then we began to see the censorship to any competing narrative. Threats of losing our license became real, and more silenced themselves out of fear. We made the government our god, and nurses and doctors were weaponized in this war against humanity. The more we speak the truth boldly, the more people it encourages to come forward. Today we will hear from two nurses, one in Florida and the other in Arizona, who exhibited moral courage. Courage is contagious. I hope their stories encourages you to tell yours. Reach out to me at Jody, J-O-D-I, at AmericaOutloud.com. And with that, let's get started. Donna Lowry has been a nurse for 35 years. For 31 of those years, she was employed at Parish Medical Center. 16 of those years were spent in the labor and delivery and OB departments. So as nurses, we flow to other units when the hospital census is low. And on Sunday, September 6, 2021, Donna was told to float down to the med-surg unit to help the charge nurse who had a full patient load. When she noticed that the health unit secretary on the floor was crying, Donna went over to the secretary and asked her what was wrong. Secretary said that her mom has been in the hospital now for 9 days because of COVID, and that she just got a call from the doctor that they were looking to intubate her. Donna asked her at that time if she knew of the drug ivermectin or had heard of it. She said no. So Donna gave her some education on it. And she said, I want to try this for my mom. Donna advocated to the hospitalist to order it. And he did. The patient wound up receiving 3 of the 5 doses of remdesivir. Now, this was not known until after the patient wound up passing away. But Donna came. When she came to work several days later, before she came to work, she actually got a phone call saying that she was suspended for advocating for ivermectin. Donna, you want to take it from here? Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me and allowing me to share the story that the Lord has called me into, and I give him honor and glory and praise for calling me into this season of life. So I was suspended on Friday after advocating on a Sunday, terminated on a Monday. And from there, of course, I was very upset, quite depressed. It's what I was called to do. Parish Medical Center was my mission field. This was, for me, this was a spiritual attack. The CEO of the hospital, George Mkhitaryan, that's Parish Medical Center in Titusville, Florida. He came into the pharmacy that Friday when I was suspended, asking if anyone had been asking about ivermectin. My name came up. I feel that Satan used George Mkhitaryan, the CEO of the hospital, and Edwin Lofton, the chief nursing officer, for evil, because that was my mission field. But the Lord has turned it for good. Because even though Titusville, Florida was my mission field, since being terminated, I have been able to help so many get ivermectin and early treatment for COVID. I'm free.
Yeah.
My freedom of speech has been restored. If I was chosen for this season, if I was chosen to speak on ivermectin, I will go as far as the Lord has called me into. I prayed before I went to work that day. We prayed before we advocated for the ivermectin mm-hmm. with the family. So I know that was a part of his perfect plan for me, for that family, for the stage that I'm in right now. I'm now working in a pharmacy, in a compounding pharmacy, West Cocoa Pharmacy. I work for Dawn Butterfield. She has a heart to do the right thing. Along with those two doctors that I asked for the ivermectin, those two doctors at Parish Medical Center, and for their protection, I will not say their names, the hospitalist and the intensivist, they said yes about the ivermectin. They are heroes. Mm-hmm. People say to me, Donna, how did you get fired? You just advocated. Yes, that's what nurses do. We advocate for our patients. They say, you didn't write the order. You didn't even give the medication. That's how I know this is a spiritual attack. This is a spiritual matter. And I know that my God is fighting my battles for me. I know that through him, this battle will be won. If we go to Deuteronomy 20, verse 4, God is he who goes with you to fight for you against your enemies to give you the victory.
Amen.
So I give him honor and glory and praise. I am not angry at George Mkhitaryan or Edwin Lofton for my termination. I pray for them to repent and ask forgiveness for all these lives that have been lost over this hospital protocol that kills. These two doctors said yes to the ivermectin because they know it works. It's cheap and effective. It won a Nobel Prize.
Right. And furthermore, you know, it's safe. It's safer than Tylenol.
Yes.
It kills less people a year than Tylenol does. And so, you know, it's important to note that this patient was in the hospital for 9 days. She had received remdesivir when she was admitted for 5 of those days, right? And then she gets, you know, now she's declining when you show up on the unit. She's declining 9 days later. 4 days after receiving, you know, finishing her remdesivir protocol treatment, she is declining and she's about to be intubated. You suggest ivermectin, and 3 days later, you get a text from the daughter saying that she stood up her mom and she was drinking clear liquid. She was standing at her bedside. And then all of a sudden she declines because what they come to find out was that they discontinued the ivermectin and started her back up on remdesivir when the family did not want that. The family didn't know until after they received medical records after she died. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct. We are thinking she's getting the ivermectin. When I saw her again on that Thursday prior to being suspended, after the end of my shift, I merely went to the daughter at the end of my shift. I'm off the clock. How's your mom doing? She was had to go on BiPAP. And I said, maybe another round of ivermectin. And the daughter sent me a text. My mom's going to get started on another round of ivermectin, which would have been after the first round, round two. Mm-hmm. So we all think that she's been on ivermectin this whole time. Unbeknownst to us, when the CEO, George Mkhitaryan, went into the pharmacy on that Friday, prior to my getting terminated, asking if anyone had been talking about ivermectin, my name came up. He not only put in steps to have the chief nursing officer, Edwin Lofton, terminate me, but he had the pharmacy let the doctor know we are stopping the ivermectin. The family did not know any of this. I did not know any of this. I actually, at the time of advocating, I was so proud to work for Parish Medical Center. In my heart, I thought, wow, we are going to pioneer the way. We are going to save lives and put an end to this death protocol. Mm-hmm. That was not. That's where Satan was using them for evil. Mm-hmm. But the Lord has turned it for good. Because so many people are able to be helped. We have some amazing doctors in Florida. We have Dr. Michael Uphues. We have Dr. John Littell. We have Dr. Jeffrey Mueller. They're my COVID family. Lori Bontel. I had the opportunity going to Tallahassee and speaking on the House floor and sharing my story. Lori Bontel is fighting the same fight as a sister to a person who died because of COVID in Ohio. She is a fighter, and she said, you go on that House floor and you tell your story.
Mm-hmm. That's where I first heard of you.
And I had no, I was going with my signs. I was going to rally at the Capitol. I had no intention. It was never, it never occurred to me. Anyone that I saw in a suit, I would tell my story, but it never occurred to me to go on the House floor and speak. God is so good, because even in that, I was able to share of his goodness and his grace and his mercy.
Yeah, that's right. Because you also told me about another ICU nurse that advocated for ivermectin, and he was, and he, or the FLCCC protocol, because ultimately the treatment of this disease is a, you know, multi-drug approach. Right. Yeah. But we advocate for off-label medications all the time. I mean, what's the big one in OB that you?
Misoprostol.
Mm-hmm. And what's that used for?
It's used to induce labor. If you look it up on the FDA website, there are cautions in using misoprostol: uterine rupture, mm-hmm. death to fetus, death to mother. Mm-hmm. So we can use off-label use when it's convenient and a financial gain. But when we ask about ivermectin, which costs $3, no. Zane, yes, Zane would speak. My friend Zane Fields worked in the ICU at Parish Medical Center for 8 years. He would talk to the doctors all through COVID. They would walk away from him about the FLCCC. And yes, it's not just about ivermectin. It's about early treatment. It's about the protocol. They would walk away from him like he was crazy. All I did was ask. There was no argument. There was no big discussion. I simply asked, but I prayed before I asked. And they said yes. Mm-hmm. Why all of a sudden did they say yes to me? When Zane, who is a very intelligent nurse, he's just amazing, they would walk away like he was speaking a foreign language.
Yeah. And why would they stop a medication in which the patient was showing improvement?
Yes. The patient verbalized to the doctor, the family verbalized to the doctor that she was improving, to the point that the doctor making rounds actually noted in her chart, patient states feeling better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then they not only discontinue it, but they get you out of there after 31 years of service to the same hospital.
I thought I was going to retire from there.
Sure. Absolutely. I thought I was going to retire from my federal hospital, you know, and then the Lord definitely had other plans for me, but I was going around talking about FLCCC protocol since 2020, you know, with the McCullough protocol. And ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine. Nobody wanted to hear it. Nobody wanted to hear it. And it's really sad. So now you're saying that you work at West Cocoa Pharmacy in Cocoa, Florida. And the pharmacist has compounded ivermectin since the beginning of COVID there.
She's amazing. She and her compounding technician, Sarah, they are amazing. They are so amazing. They seek to do the right thing. We actually now are helping when patients come in. I have this wonderful ivermectin shirt that I wear, and I get to share my story with patients. And I ask them, you know, are you taking the vitamin C and the D and the zinc? And I go through, we have the protocol from the FLCCC Alliance printed out. I've actually been honored to be on a Zoom call with Dr. Corey, and I shared this with him that, you know, I spoke of your protocol when I got terminated. Like, it works. I believe in it. And when these patients come in the pharmacy, I refer them to Dr. Corey, Dr. Paul Merrick, Dr. McCullough, to this protocol. And so now we've got this box, and it has all of their protocol in this box. We refer them to wonderful nurse practitioners and doctors, the doctors that I've mentioned, that will call in these prescriptions mm-hmm. to our pharmacy. And we can put together your COVID box, because I tell people, don't wait until you have COVID to get prepared, right? The last thing you want to do is think, now what am I going to do? If your box is ready, you get your box, you pull out your protocol, and then you take your medications. They're right there in front of you. You don't have to call your doctor. You have everything ready.
That's how safe these medications are. And yes. And Nurse Michelle, who's on here too, Nurse Michelle has been advocating in for these protocols, and she has been a staunch advocate for helping people understand the protocol, right? Because a lot of people, they see the protocol and it's just, it's a lot for the lay person who, you know, the average American reads at a seventh grade level. So it's a little much to say, you know, to have to go through the algorithm, but Nurse Michelle has been treating or helping people understand the protocol and educate on the protocol. And I know that you've received a lot of backlash too, Michelle.
Yeah, just hearing her story, knowing that there's other nurses and other people that are on the good side out there doing something. We know for a fact that we are out there giving early treatment, providing knowledge for these people to know what to gather at home. Y'all are actually a one-stop shop that literally, I'm literally a place on a platform giving them lists of things that they have to gather, because I'm not the one-stop shop. I'm showing them to go to my free doctor who's going to help them get the prescriptions and secure that box before they actually get sick, so they're ready. And the beauty is that Donna can attest to the same thing I can attest to. Early treatment works. These people don't end up in the hospital. These people end up with really good outcomes. And sadly, those that are out there against Donna for advocating for something that they waited 9 days and gave her remdesivir. She wasn't improving. She was declining. They didn't offer any of these early treatment options to her, and she declined. And sadly, all the options that they provided to her ended up in her death. So we're on the outside providing options that, just like the FLCCC and all the other brave doctors say, that if you do this early, it works. And we are a testament to the fact that it does work.
Yes. And you know, Michelle, and I know you all can probably say the same thing. Everyone that the Lord has brought to me since getting terminated, I received so many calls, people from church, people from family, people from friends of family. I've got COVID. What can I do? And I refer them to my nurse practitioner friends or Dr. Uphues. Nobody, irregardless of comorbidities, had to go to the hospital to suffer the protocol that kills. Nobody has died.
That's
nobody.
Beautiful. And you got a test. You actually got interviewed as well. Didn't you get interviewed on Epic Times?
Yes.
So your story has been getting some national attention, which I absolutely love. I myself, when I found out about early treatment, hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, as a nurse, all I did was look at my, you know, medication program on the computer and looked at, hey, is there any contraindications? What's the safety profile? And I got that in my cabinet in October of 2020, right? So, and I told all my friends and family, here's a doctor that's prescribing, get it in your cabinet. I think we need to have ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine in our cabinet like we have Tylenol in our cabinet.
Yeah. And Jody, I've heard you mention this on your podcast, and I actually have referenced this in speaking about ivermectin, table 2E, right?
Characteristics of antiviral treatment.
That's right. Okay. When was the very first antiviral that was lit, and it changed. They changed that chart in January after I was terminated. The very first antiviral is remdesivir. And what's listed? A list of adverse events, right?
Oh, yes.
Okay. But what's listed under ivermectin?
Nothing.
That's right. And they say any effects could actually be from the illness itself.
Mm-hmm.
Gee,
that's right.
We're withholding something that doesn't cause liver disease, liver failure, doesn't cause kidney failure.
Donna, you have 30 seconds and I'm giving you the floor. What would you like our audience to know?
That I am so thankful to be called to this season of the group of amazing doctors and nurses that that are fighting for their licenses, defending their licenses to do no harm. We are standing by our oath. We are not caving to the dollar. We are out there trying to save lives, not kill them.
That's right. We are abiding by our ethical principles of nursing, right? And
patient advocates. And, we are patient advocates. That's what we're doing.
And I will do it to my last breath. And I praise and honor my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, for this fight, because we are fighting the good fight in the name of Jesus.
Amen. With that, we will go to a break and we'll be right back.
Hello, I'm Ben Marble, MD, and I founded MyFreeDoctor.com as a donation-supported, faith-based nonprofit with a mission to save lives by delivering free doctor visits to patients in all 50 states of America. MyFreeDoctor.com treats a broad range of health concerns like COVID-19, long COVID, sinus infections, urinary tract infections, rashes, medication refills, and more. So please visit MyFreeDoctor.com, where we're healing America one person at a time.
All right, you've all heard Malcolm and the great Dr. Peter McCullough talk about the povidone iodine-based nasal spray Cofix RX. They talk about it because it's a product that actually works in combating colds, flus, and coronaviruses. Cofix is made in the USA and recommended by thousands of doctors and pharmacists nationwide. It's simple. By attacking viruses where they incubate, you make it easier for your body to heal. Check out the Cofix RX banner ad on AmericaOutloud.com and save 20% by using promo code OUTLOUD.
Welcome back. I would like to introduce Shelly Candelaria. She is a BSN nurse out of Cottonwood, Arizona. She has a background in cardiac, thoracic, progressive care, research nursing, surgery, and hospice care. She's been in the medical field for over 14 years and currently owns and operates an IV infusion company. In February 2021, she found herself at a vaccination clinic when she was asked to supervise NAU students, Northern Arizona University, RN student nurses, for a vaccine clinic. At the time, 58 people came in, and the process that was going on there was that the nurse practitioner would consent the patient, someone else, and then the student nurse would inject, and her role in that clinic was to monitor for adverse events. People would stay about 15, 30 minutes, and then they would leave if they weren't having any issues. What she came to find out later in the day, one of the people that they vaccinated wound up having a massive heart attack and died. He was in his 60s, a healthy man with no comorbidities, so no medical histories, and this took her by surprise. Shelly, welcome.
Thanks, Jody, for having me.
Yes, thank you. Nurse Michelle and I are really excited to interview you. So I'm sorry that happened. I know that takes a lot. But with your background in research nursing, what did you think of this event?
Well, you know, I kind of had it in the back of my head, and everyone there knew that I was not pro-vaccine. Though I wanted to make sure that the patients that were coming in were safe if they were to go into anaphylactic or, you know, have a heart attack, that they would get prompt care. And being by the hospital, it would have been, you know, a faster response and probably maybe could have changed the outcome for that patient. But as soon as I got the call that a patient had passed from that particular injection clinic that was held that day, I notified my management, who was in charge of the clinic, because they, you know, they thought they were doing the humanitarian thing and, you know, wanted to play their part in making sure people were safe from COVID. And for me, it all really just seemed too much and too fast.
When you say that, I think your background in research nursing, right? Tell the audience a little bit about what that entailed.
Yeah, so I was involved in a double-blind study. We didn't know the drug. It was in its 10th year. So it was about to roll out on the market because it had passed all of the criteria that a study or a clinical trial has to meet in order to be safe in the public, in human trials. And so I was a pre-op PAC nurse for that particular study. And it was rigorous training. We had to meet so many certifications just to even work there. And then as soon as we heard the patient say the magic word in this particular study, pain, RN hat went off, research hat went on. You had to pull labs at certain times. There were timers all over the clinical floor, the floor that we were on. PCA pumps would hook up, and then we would give either a placebo drug or the drug. And you could tell which one had the drug and which patient didn't. We did 5 patients at a time. And the next week, we would roll in 5 more patients. But every single time, it had to meet strict policy, protocol, procedure, guidelines. And for me, after that patient dying, I knew this was a very deadly vaccine because we're talking 58 patients and one died. That's the stakes are way too high. That we're not right. talking hundreds of thousands of patients and one patient dies or 10.
And we're so you were also... You were concerned as well about the clinical trials in this drug because they only had a few months of data. And now here you are a research nurse and a drug is in its 10th year,
yeah,
right? And right. One of the certifications you had to take was about the Nuremberg Code, correct?
Correct.
And yes.
I saw things that were being violated with that code. And it's clear, being ignored, of course. And I think down the road, hopefully we will see another huge trial like the Nuremberg trial. But those codes were developed so that we didn't make that mistake again in the world, not just in the United States, in the world. And so we all kind of live by that code when research is being conducted. And it was completely put on the back burner. Not right. one mention.
Yes. And I agree with you. I think with the COVID rollout, true informed consent cannot be given because there was no insert in the drug.
No.
Right.
Insane. I have never seen an insert a vaccination fact sheet for that particular vaccination to this day. Even with you go to a pharmacy and the pharmacist will give you the COVID shot and they have you've seen how many blank sheets get pulled out of that vial box. There's right. nothing.
There's nothing. So yeah. true informed consent automatically off the bat is off the table and that should right. disqualify this injection from being given to anybody. So I agree. 100%. And I could understand where, go ahead.
I mean, it's deadly. I mean, like I said, that's 1 in 58 patients. A part of me is like so happy that the other two didn't show up, you know,
right.
Because you never know. And I don't understand how we could vaccinate and give medications and new technology without knowing how to educate the patient on it, what the side effects could be, without it being a very controlled clinical trial, which you can't do when you give it to a world population.
No, you can't. And no. And when most providers aren't, you know, looking at the data or trying to inform theirs because they themselves took the shot. So right. why would they want to know if it's bad, you know, because right. they already took it. They can't get it back.
What's so worse for when you know it's bad and you're the nurse, physician, whoever giving the injection and you know it's bad? Mm-hmm. Are you violating your oath at this point? Where did your morals, where did your ethics go? Where did do no harm go?
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, I agree. So I also want to talk a little bit, you know, you left the clinic after that happened, and then you decided to start pursuing how to set up your own IV infusion clinic. But right when you were setting that up, your husband got sick with COVID and he went into the ER. They diagnosed him with COVID pneumonia, but he was really... he was misdiagnosed, correct? He had blood clots, but they weren't even drawing the test to assess for that. And they didn't even do a CT scan on him. Mm-hmm.
And I've never seen a lab for a fibrinogen, ferritin level, or a D-dimer until this day for that first hospital stay. And he was at this point 14 days post COVID. He didn't start having difficulty breathing until about day 12 and a half. I was told to my face, good news is he doesn't have any blood clots. And by that next day, he was begging, bawling me to get him out. Intubation was being thrown around. The word intubation was being thrown around. He went from 2 liters at home to 10 in an hour and a half. I asked if he could be given vitamin C infusions to not let his kidneys get dried out. And we know how important that is as nurses. Kidneys go, things start going very, very bad.
Right. And but so, what they were doing was trying to dry out the COVID patients. So they weren't even hydrating them.
No. And he hadn't had anything to drink. So first of all, we all know the human body cannot repair itself without nutrition and hydration. Period. Even if you feel like they need dried out, still give them something and give them some Lasix. Mm-hmm. Their body still needs to those nutrients to process and deal with the stress that it's under.
And now, was the doctor informing you of the plan of care? Was he calling you asking? No.
No. And they had told me we don't follow. We can't give those things here, because we follow the government's protocol. And I was like, okay, well, I'm, thinking, well, then you should hang up your white coat, because this is a very different case. This is pretty much post COVID. He's allowed to go back to work at this point. And so, I was very nervous. The next day, the second day, came around, I was called by a doctor and told, get your husband out of that hospital if you want him to live now. And then he had another doctor call from Maryland, which I did not know. And she was like, confirmed, get him out of there. We will do this together at home. And I said, okay. And they refused to bring my husband down. He was still talking at this point. I had to call, in oxygen. I had everything waiting for him. So it was a safe transfer. Safety is at the forefront for me, especially with my husband. And going off, protocols that physicians are guiding me with and giving me orders to do. And they wouldn't bring him down. I said, sign the AMA. No one would take my call. I'm like, where is he at? An hour and a half goes by. I was done waiting. I went up to the second COVID floor, unzipped both COVID tents, walked in, and took my husband out of there. And they did not like me, but the AMA sheet was sitting across the room, completely across the room, not signed, not explained, not nothing. I just feel like they were waiting for him to collapse. Mm-hmm. So he would go unconscious and
they could justify keeping him.
That's right. And so, and first of all, to come to find out, like Jody said, he had blood clots. He did not have pneumonia. Brought him home. I'm like thinking in my head, okay, they did this, this, and this. It's not blood clots. It's pneumonia. 6 different doctors across the U.S. Do this, do this, do this, do this. get him through this stage, you know, we'll get him out of that cytokine storm is what I was told. And it wasn't working, you guys. Got up to 20 liters, two concentrators wide in on a mask. And I knew at this point I had to get him. I knew it was blood clots. And I said, honey, you got to go back in. It was a really solemn, pretty dark time. Our church came out. They laid hands on us. They prayed over us, prayed over the situation. And I think very well God was there, because if I think I would have waited one more day, it might have been one day too late. If I would have left him in the hospital the first time, it probably would have been too late way prior. But I sent him back, and I argued with that doctor too in the ED, a different hospital. And I said, let's go back to our basics. This is a doctor that he grew up with, so he was more willing to listen to us. And my husband had a big sign on him. It says, no remdesivir, no intubation. Okay. He wrote his last wishes and he said goodbye to all of us. Because at this point, when he left the house, he was on 40 liters BiPAP. It was kind of crazy. And I told the doctor, well, what's his D-dimer? And he said, well, it's over 10,000.
Wow.
And I said, well, he's got blood clots. Well, we can't confirm that. I said, well, get a damn CT scan and confirm it and get him the medication he needs. Because he's been sitting there all day at this point. This was not until the late afternoon, evening. And I said, if you really think it's COVID pneumonia, push some solumedrol. I'm done with the 4 milligrams of dexamethasone. I'm done. It's not going to do anything. He's been on 8 for 12 days. Done. And so he did exactly that. And he was like, okay. Of course, they treat him a little different because he was not vaccinated. The hospitalist up on the floor, the COVID floor, said, you know, you put yourself in this position because you didn't get vaccinated. I fully expect you to die. And wow. I'm like, okay, I don't think so. Not today. I said, we got God on our side, and I got heart to, you know, do what I need to do from home.
Yeah. And so you did. Actually, they still weren't allowing you in the hospital, but the nurses that were taking care of him, these new graduate nurses, were taking care of him, and you were helping them along to understand how to critically think through this.
Yeah. Right? I mean, you know, brand new, right out of nursing school, up to, you know, 3 years, and you're still a little like shy doing things. And so I knew he was on 50 liters at 100% FiO2. I knew his lungs were going to get real tired really fast. And they didn't put him on a heparin drip. I fully expected them to. They were giving him, I want to say, started off with 40 of Lovenox, which I'm like, that's not going to work.
Oh, come on.
And so they increased it. The nurse that was in there, and I did know, and they set it up to where every single nurse had him that I knew. One in particular worked for me. So I knew my husband had a fighting chance if he got that nurse. And, she helped save my husband's life. She's an incredible nurse because she stayed within her scope of practice. I said, honey, this is your scope of practice. This is like the third day. I'm like, you're never going to know if he's going to do well if you don't turn that vent down. So go in there, turn it down 5 at a time.
You mean the BiPAP? You mean the BiPAP?
Yeah.
Yeah, because he was never ventilated, thank
God. No, never vented. The BiPAP machine. Mm-hmm. Or the
high flow. Oxygen. Yeah. Right. And that's a big thing that I saw through COVID, was that a lot of people did not touch the oxygen. No. And when I would float to the ICU, I would literally many times have a patient that was on 15, 20 liters. And by the end of the shift, they were discharged the next morning. And people were like, well, what did you do? And I said, I titrated to make sure that they don't need it, because you only have respiratory therapy come and by maybe once a shift. And if you need them. Yeah. Yep.
once a shift. And I'm like, he's not going to ever turn that thing down. He doesn't know what's going on in the day.
Right.
And I, you know, I gave her enough courage. She had argued with the doctor for several days on, you know, the heparin, and his kidney started showing some decline. I'm like, give him this many, many bottles of water per his, you know, ounces per his body weight. We're going to do this.
Yeah. You were helping them along all the while. You were at home, very, very sick. And we're going to go to a short break. And when we come back, we're going to hear the rest of your story.
America Out Loud beats to the pulse of our nation. We know when you're angry, you're troubled, confused, glad, and thankful. We know you because we are you. Join us as we explore the most important issues of our time. We are America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
We know you love the versatility and portability of the Genesis Fogger, but sometimes you just want to set it and forget it. Well, we heard you. Introducing the UX4 HOCL Atomizer. This stationary unit quietly protects you and is perfect for smaller spaces. With over 250,000 units sold in Japan, it's now available in the United States. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud to see the UX4 in action and receive a 15% discount on either Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you're ready for anything.
All right, welcome back. So your husband's in the hospital, Shelly. He's doing a little bit better, but you yourself come down very, you know, very sick, and you have 5 kids at home, correct?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So I developed broken heart syndrome. I don't know if you know what that is. Basically heart failure. From the catecholamine bursts, I was getting about every 15 to 30 minutes for 7 days. And I couldn't control it. I couldn't stop it. And so my heart swelled up and I knew something was wrong because I thought I was an AFib. I wasn't. But then I developed pericarditis pretty bad. Showed some effusion around the, you know, the heart within the sac. And I was not doing well. I was actually very, very ill. As far as like that type of, you know, COVID, I had it way worse than my husband. He just had blood clots. It was, you know, something I still battle with today. But I went in because my PCP would not treat me, did not want to go into the hospital, don't want to put my kids through that. And he gave me, you know, slowed my heart down from 180, 180-ish, 190, 150, whatever. Some potassium, some magnesium, some other stuff. And made it to where I could go home and work through how sick I was and trying to save my husband from this end as well. Like I said, those nurses really heeded my advice. And I think that God had a huge hand in it because I don't think it could have been set up better going in. Doctor he knew from birth, basically. Nurses that I grew up and know, you know, fairly new, but still they were there and it was just set up and they wrote all over his board, something they weren't doing. They weren't even going into the room. And I'm like, they need contact. And so,
you found this PCP because your primary would not treat you. You wound up going and getting the infusion there. Mm-hmm. And then he came on board as your medical director for your infusion clinic, correct?
He did. He was out doing his due diligence and fulfilling his oath and saving people. And I said, that's something I need on my side. It was pretty incredible. Like I said, it came together almost divinely and came home, was really, really bummed about the healthcare system, the darkness, the evil, the overall feeling of being left out and just barely sleeping because I'm so sick, but barely sleeping just to get a text from my husband that he's up, because no doctor's notifying me. No one's telling me the plan of care. It was eerie. I didn't even want to be a part of nursing. I actually applied to be a teacher during my COVID stint, is what I call it. Okay. Got hired without an interview, but God had other plans for me. So
he did. And when people were calling you, to help save them. I know that you helped save a few hundred people, correct?
Yeah. We went out with my partner, and we got with our medical director who came on board. We developed a protocol. He made sure that we had the standing orders that we needed, following, you know, the frontline doc protocol, Dr. Mercola's protocol. You know, we mixed it in with some infusions because we think you can, you know, boost them up with a higher dose and then get them on their way. And it really worked really well.
What part of Mercola did you follow? What were you doing with Mercola?
So we did, of course, we did the zinc, in some cases, the colchicine. I also took that.
Did you nebulize the hydrogen peroxide like he did?
We had, I got an entire kit together. So we really, really honed in on how can we affect and save as many people as we can. And so we got a kit together. We got the NAC, the glutathione. Well, not the glutathione, because the NAC is precursor to that, but we gave it through the IV to get them boosted, but NAC, aspirin, anything over the counter, we put in there, peroxide, nebulizing machine, all the equipment. If they needed a concentrator, an ICU nurse out of this hospital, as well as my medical director, owned a ton, and we just started buying them and utilizing them.
Right. And then just giving them to the patients. And then when they were done with it, they gave them back.
Yeah. They kept everything else, but because we're, you know, you really need to stay on it for an extended period of time. We follow the budesonide protocol. If we thought it might be pneumonia related, only really saw a few, we would pull their labs. I worked with Dr. Sina, who recently spoke with Dr. Mercola at the retreat here in Sedona. She got wind that what I was doing, and she started sending me patient after patient after patient. We went on the radio.
Because Shelly, I want to touch base on this, because what was actually happening in this small town where people were being discriminated against based on their vaccination status. Mm-hmm. And you told me of a person that called you because the ER was discharging him with an oxygen sat in the 70s and said, if you don't feel comfortable going home, then go ahead and sleep in the lobby. Tell me a little bit about what you were seeing up there, because it is a small town and you only have one or two options. And that's mm-hmm. probably still driving half hour away to another hospital. And what was happening to your community when they were, you know, getting sick in the hospital?
So we have
a few minutes.
Okay. So 100% of patients that I treated were fear. They had ultimate fear of going to the hospital because of what was coming out of the hospital. I had patients calling me from in the hospital to get them out of the hospital. They were told I was the nurse that could save them. It was a crazy time. The one patient that came down from Flagstaff that was told to sleep in the lobby if he didn't want to leave, having difficulty breathing, got wind that I was, from my husband, that I was helping, I could help him because I helped my husband. I wasn't even back to work yet. I wasn't going back to work. And God had other plans because he showed up at my door and I immediately just kicked in. And I said, okay, here we go. Pulled his labs. His D-dimer came back at 7,800 around that area. You know, per our protocol, we put him on the medications he needed. He got on Eliquis and budesonide, all the supplements, nebulizer, and he's alive today. And he'll tell you.
You told me that you go to the grocery store and you see people and they're always coming up telling you, thank you for saving my life.
Yeah, well, God saved their life. I was just the vessel, but it makes me cry because little person like me can make a huge impact in such a, you know, community where people are filled with fear and doubt in our medical care. And that wasn't the only patient that we were told to go see. We would get calls late at night. Hey, they released this patient. They're in the 70s and 80s. And they said, go home. Even after their family members previously was buried, they just had died. They lost two. And that's another, you know, just
so because tell us about
we
that.
All have one thing in common.
Were these unvaccinated people?
They were doing this to the unvaxxed. And I never ran across a vaccinated patient that was sent home. Never. And I was treating vaccinated patients who had COVID, you know, so,
right, so was
very interesting. It's just, it was starting to wake people up. You know, I love my in-laws very much, with all of me. They're like my own mother and father. But they had major doubts when my husband was sick. They thought that because of me not letting him get the vaccination caused, you know, him to be as sick as he was. And that's very untrue. I read study after study, that people were getting clots from COVID. They're rare. They were rare, but left and right after vaccination, I treated, and I still do today, I get a lot of patients coming in asking me if I can reverse the vaccination. A pre-op nurse from here, so sad, in his 20s, very fit. He said, I just followed up with him a couple months ago. He said it's worse than he thought. The septum in his heart is that thick now. I said, please, whatever you do, do not work out. Do not work out. He was so scared he was going to die, because he knew something was wrong. Pericarditis, myocarditis, I believe some other things that this vaccination caused. And he did it to keep his job. You know, my old medical director, her lymph nodes swelled up this big in her armpits. Can you reverse it?
The size of a grapefruit?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Huge, huge. And yeah. I just was like, are you going to, you know, I'm thinking, are you going to listen now? Mm-hmm. It is dangerous. We know nothing about this vaccination.
I'm trying to get everyone that reports those to go immediately to the link, Truth for Health Foundation vaccine injury, because I know for sure that if at least it gets reported there, if I say, you're going to have to make sure you follow through and get it seen, at least it's going to get put on the right place. Somebody's going to investigate it appropriately.
Yeah. What's the website, Michelle?
Truth for Health Foundation vaccine injury.
How did it turn out with your in-laws, Shelley? You're saying that it was kind of a polarizing subject for you.
You know, so it was heated. You know, Joe was very sick. And so nobody, I think, even thinks correctly during that time. And I didn't really take what was said to me, against me, just as they just didn't know. They were being pumped out the wrong information. They wanted my daughter to go over there during me having COVID and Joe being in the hospital, and I let her go, against my advice to them was like, no, please, she's going to be a carrier. She's going to get you sick. And they did, feel a sense of protection having that COVID vaccination. And 4 days later, they came down with COVID both. And so I think, for them, they realize like maybe she does know what she's talking about. I don't know, but I hope so.
Yeah.
Probably a week of these kind of reports of people saying that exact same story, that it was the vaccinated people that ended up getting overconfident and they ended up getting COVID, and
it tears people apart. And, you know, if I wasn't such a forgiving person and a forgiving soul, because like I said, I love them with all my heart. I'm just glad they're on this side of the light.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember, you know, for me, I was with COVID for 18 months, not wearing a mask, taking care of our nation's highest risk population. I go to Chicago in November, and that it's the first time that it was like open for them and for a friend's birthday party. And I was with like 9, maybe 12 vaccinated people. I wound up getting sicker than I ever have from them, you know? And I was like, oh my goodness. Like, yeah. Is this there's shedding?
So much science behind this, ladies. You know, you guys are nurses. I mean, there's so much science. I mean, the everyday person's not going to know what we know. We know that.
No,
but
Shelly, we have 1 minute left. I want you to finish up and tell our audience anything you'd like to let them know.
I strongly advise against the vaccination. Everyone I meet, I will tell that too, because I'm just tired of seeing people hurt, killed, and families being destroyed and taken apart because of this vaccination. Nurses, doctors, we have a duty to fulfill and an oath to fulfill. And now's our chance to be heard before it's too late.
And I think I'm going to speak for you on this because we've talked for hours on the phone and because I was so impressed with your story, but it's really, I mean, you chose faith over fear, didn't you?
I did. God was fully in it. I think he knew that my husband and I had a purpose here. And I'm still figuring out that path for my life and I'm just letting him lead me. And, I don't think I can go wrong with that. I don't go out in fear anymore. I don't have fear of what's going to happen. I just walk in faith. So.
Amen. And I think that with the three of us on here, we all feel the same. So, well, that was a show for you guys today. I brought on, or we were able to interview Shelly from Arizona, Nurse Donna from Florida, and two brave, courageous, ethically bound, upholding their principles, staying on the side of faith and choosing that over fear, and ultimately, guys, they exhibited moral courage. They did what was right, even when they were surrounded by all the wrong. And that takes a special person. And I'm telling you, and this truth movement, 95% of the people I meet are all guided by Jesus. By Jesus, they have a faith, they have a strong faith, and they have afraid. A light that's shining in them. And they are, you know, shining it bright in this darkness. And I want you guys to know that there are so many more out there. I encourage you to reach out, Jody@AmericaOutloud.com. You can reach out to me, email me directly, or you can go to my Instagram page, Nurse for Natives. And I'll have all the links to get in touch with these ladies in our show notes. And we'll see who God brings to us next. Thank you for joining me on America Out Loud Pulse. Always a beat ahead.